Hello, Husker fans. Welcome to the Pick Six podcast on a gorgeous Friday. Sun's out. My guns are not out, right? So I'm covered up here. But the sun's out about 55 degrees. And this is Sam McEwen along with Evan Bland. Abby Barmore will be joining us here probably in about a half hour. It's a good time, right? Just finally feeling like spring's going around the corner. Lots of people getting vaccinated. Lots of good things happening out in our cultures. Try to stay safe, as always, folks, please. But things are opening up a little bit. And so we're going to talk a little bit of spring football. We've had some opportunities to talk to some of the assistant coaches. There are a couple of developing storylines, one of which is with the Nebraska running backs. We'll get to that in a minute. We'll talk Husker baseball, number one team in the Big Ten right now. And that's a big deal. And Maryland here in a couple of hours. Evan will be rolling out to the ballpark here in about 3 hours, 4 hours, to cover that game, that series. We'll talk a little bit of Husker hoops, and then we got a bunch of questions from Twitter that we'll go through. Some football, mostly football, but one baseball, a few others, and Abby will be on for that. We want to remind everybody, our sponsors, Team Schwalbach. The Schwalbach Agency is a family-owned all-state insurance agency with 4 licensed insurance pros, saving thousands of Nebraska Husker fans' money. They sell home, auto, life, and flood insurance across Nebraska, and they also insure all the big boy toys. Might be a big boy toy weekend. Motorcycles, boats, RVs, off-road vehicles. Folks kind of traveling about with their RVs now that it's getting warm again. If you've had your roof replaced in the last 5 years, give Daryl Schwalbach, Kyle Schwalbach, Nancy Mostek, or Kyle Murdoch a call at 402-590-5200. They can help you save a bundle. Free, no obligation, insurance reviews and quotes. Make sure all their fellow Nebraska fans are properly protected. Again, that's 402-590-5200 or www.nebraskaallstate.com. Thank you, Team Schwalbach. Evan, football this week. A couple of storylines that I want to cover. But first, I want to ask you what jumped out at you over the last 2 interview sessions that we've had with the media. Well, we didn't have them with the media, the coaches and the players did.
Right. It's been good. It's, it feels a little more normal all the time being back in person, even being 20 minutes, half an hour late to the availabilities when the players come out. I mean, it's very refreshing to jump back into it.
Yeah.
I think for me, a lot of it's been just seeing guys in person and what they've looked like physically. I mean, you've talked a little bit about it with Adrian Martinez. He looks like he's slimmed up to what he has from what he has been the last couple of years. You can look at a guy like Turner Corcoran and see like, man, that guy, he was impressive physically out of high school, but even after a year now, he has definitely put on some muscle and really looking the part of a guy who can play left tackle at Nebraska for a number of years. Seeing Gabe Irvin in practice was impressive. The running back, the true freshman. So I think that's been a big part of it, has just been seeing guys. Heck, even Greg Austin, the O-line coach, looked a lot trimmer from when we saw him a year ago.
Wouldn't want to mess with him any day of the week.
No, I didn't before, but man, certainly not now. So I think that's been neat. But
he'd go out there, he'd be. Yeah, I think Turner Corcoran's going to be their best lineman this year, but I think Greg could probably be the second best lineman. For a couple plays. I don't know how his knees are doing, but he looks great. Yeah, he really
does. But, I think I've just been struck by the business-like approach to things. I mean, there hasn't been a lot of drama. There was some talk, I guess, about the decision not to play in a bowl game last year. But for the most part, coaches will talk about players when they're asked. They'll offer up kind of progress reports about their positions. But beyond that, there just hasn't been a lot of proclamations. There hasn't been a lot of predictions or bold statements about the year. It just feels like a team that really immersed itself in off-season conditioning. They all felt good about their testing numbers, and that's the case every spring. Everyone's bigger, faster, and stronger. But it just seemed like, especially after the last year, a lot of the extra stuff that has surrounded this program was stripped away a little bit this spring, and that's been refreshing.
Mm-hmm. I think there's been a little bit of drama. There's urgent. You can hear it in the voices of the assistant coaches that there's a sense of urgency. And they're taking that on maybe themselves even more. Scott brought all those guys back. And I think when you bring everybody back, you're essentially saying, I didn't think I was going to get a better result by bringing in a bunch of new people, but we got to get this thing done. And I think you've seen the assistant coaches to some degree, Tuioti and Verduzco especially, have, you know, kind of have Frost back. I think there's a sense of Becton too, of like, we need to cut the crap. We need to get good, and we need to start winning games. Like, enough of this. And I'm sure if you went and polled every assistant about that Illinois game, which is a long time past now, I think they'd probably shake their heads in just disgust and frustration over that game specifically, because they were beat. I mean, the Illinois handed it to Nebraska that day, and Nebraska was outcoached and outplayed and a bunch of other things. But you know, I think I get a sense of urgency there. I think the running back position is a concern, and they may be able to bail themselves out if Gabe Irvin is that guy. And I'm kind of writing this for the rewind on Monday, but this happens more often than people think, where a true freshman comes in and he's a pretty damn good football player. One of the guys I reference in the piece is Breece Hall, but Tyler Goodson at Iowa was a good player in 2019. Stevie Scott at Indiana was a good player in 2018. Elijah Collins had a bad year for Michigan State as a sophomore, but he was pretty darn good as a freshman. Obviously, Mo Ibrahim had a really good true freshman year. So it's not uncommon for a true freshman running back to contribute. That's been the case at times at Nebraska, whether it was David Horn or it was Marlon Lucky, he was okay. Or it was, obviously Amon. So there's been times when you know, Nebraska's had success with freshman running backs. But that's an issue. I think there's a concern there when, you know, we go to practice. And honestly, I was not paying close enough attention to where I did not, because I was kind of looking at the linemen. I did not see that Sevion Morrison was not out there. But, you know, I trust the other reporters when they say he wasn't. And that's a concern. I mean, that's a guy that you need to have in your program, doing the things that you want to do. They spent a lot of time and energy recruiting Sevion Morrison, and then he didn't play last year because he had COVID and some other issues. And now, you know, it's time. It's time for him. He has the same opportunity that Irvin has. Marquise Stepp was hurt. He showed up with an injury that he didn't know he had. That's not great. He's going to be back by the summer, but he's going to lose all of spring camp, all of the rhythm that you would get. Ramir Johnson was not in pads. Now, you know, I've talked enough about Johnson to people kind of know where I feel on that. He's had opportunities on the field and I, you know, hasn't always gotten it done. And then, you know, Marvin Scott was available. Gabe Irvin was available. Ronald Tompkins, who's been hurt really since before he arrived, was not in practice or didn't appear to be. Those are concerns. Like, this is a position where you have apportioned 6 scholarships. So I don't know what that is. What is that, Evan? That's about 8% of your scholarships are apportioned to this position. And then you probably have 5 walk-ons on top of that. It's probably time to find 2 or 3 guys who can carry the dang football, because they weren't able to find that really the last 2 seasons. Once Maurice Washington was kicked off, and I'm not saying they shouldn't have kicked Maurice Washington off the team. I think he had to go. But once they did that, once he stopped playing, well, then they didn't have people, so they had to rely on Wando Robinson. And one of the reasons Robinson isn't here anymore is because he knew that he was, frankly, the best running back on the team after Dedrick Mills. And they were going to keep leaning on him. So in some ways, again, I think Robinson's a loss. He was a very good player. But in some ways, his departure is an asset for Ryan Held, in the sense that, well, we can't go to that well. We can't rely on him to do this for us. So we need to find people who can do it that are here now. And but it's a concern. I mean, it's a concerning position. That's a position where Nebraska should be very good and has recruited lots of high-rated, good pedigree out of high school kind of players, and they have not paid off. They just have. Maurice Washington did to some degree, but outside of him, it has not paid off yet. Meanwhile, Breece Hall, stepson of Jeff Smith, at Iowa State's run for 2,600 yards in 2 years. Nebraska could have had him, bro. So Nebraska took two commits from Ramir Johnson and Ronald Tompkins before Breece Hall committed to Iowa State. So, you know, it's an issue, I think. And that to me is dramatic because that's a position that should not be that hard to get right. And they might have gotten it right with Gabe Irvin.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we've heard a lot about Gabe Irvin from different people here in camp and how impressive he's been. And I was high on him out of as a recruit out of high school. I mean, he came from a powerhouse program there in Georgia. Yes. He can catch passes. He can block. He can run. He's fast. He's strong. He really has the full package. But I just kind of found myself thinking, like, we're still in this position with Nebraska where even at a spot like running back, like you said, where guys break out often, we're still at a spot where you look to a true freshman to salvage a position. And that's just not where you want to be when you're talking about rebuilding a spot, right? Like you talk about Breece Hall stepping in at Iowa State. They had other guys that they could have gone to or that were at least viable options. You look at Nebraska's situation and yeah, they have six scholarship guys, but it doesn't, you know, most of these guys have had their opportunities in recent years and have not.
It's not the end of the world to rely on a true freshman at that position. It happens more often. It doesn't happen all the time.
No, but
Jonathan Taylor at Wisconsin. I'm not saying Gabe Irvin is Jonathan Taylor.
Right.
But Jonathan Taylor ran for, I think, 1,800 yards as a true freshman. You can do it because a position that relies on natural ability and elusiveness and these other things. He could come in and really be really good and be a solution to the problem.
He could. But my point is that you use Jonathan Taylor as an example. Say he doesn't break out, Wisconsin's going to be fine. They would have had somebody else step in and they would have gotten decent production, not Jonathan Taylor production, but they would have been okay.
Sure.
If Gabe Irvin doesn't do it this year, if he doesn't break out, what does Nebraska have? You hope Marquise Stepp steps in without a spring and jumps up. You hope.
I think Marquise Stepp can do that.
You hope half the roster gets healthy all of a sudden after a history of not. Like, it's just, it leaves you in this spot where it's kind of a boom or bust. And I just, like you said, with all the resources they've apportioned to that position, it doesn't feel like where you want to be going into year four.
Now, I'm going back through the Super Six that 247 Sports put together, and we appreciate that they do that. They do a good job of that. Most of the people had Gabe Irvin in their top six. I mean, the majority, I would say, more than the majority. And in the overall thing, he finished fifth. Now, I think you had him the second highest of everybody. One person had him third. I think you had him fourth. I had him fifth. So, you know, I mean, there was an acknowledgement that this guy is a pretty good football player. Sure. And that he was going to have an opportunity. And I think what informed that for us was the lack of production that we had seen. Now you go back, I think, to the 2020 Super Six, and I'm going to say Sevion Morrison was ranked higher, to be perfectly honest with you.
He was more accomplished as a high school player. Yeah,
he was. I mean, you know, he was a very, very good player in high school at Nebraska, in Oklahoma. There's no question about that. You know, he's a very dynamic runner in the open field. And I don't know that I would describe Irvin that way, but I prefer running backs that are actually good at traffic over guys that are, I don't know. Let's see here. You know, I know that I did not have him in my top six. Most of my top six is gone. Manning's still there, but Green, Delancey, Fleming. Yeah, you know what? A lot of people did not have him in their top six. That's interesting. Mm. So he was sixth of the composite, whereas Irvin was fifth. Now, some of that's based on the guys that were, you know, a lot of people knew or thought Omar Manning was going to be the bee's knees, and Turner Corcoran was number two, whatever. But to me, that's an issue going forward. And I don't know when we're going to talk to Held again, but we're going to talk to Frost again on Monday, I think. And we're going to delve into that because I know Scott wants that to be addressed and resolved. I mean, Scott certainly has an interest in the wide receivers. He's coaching that group a little bit now. He certainly has an interest in the quarterbacks. But Nebraska football has long been a running back. If you go back, mm-hmm. gosh, all the way to the early 1970s when they had Orduna, and then they had Jeff Kinney, and then Andre Franklin, and Tough Tony Davis, and I Am Hip, and Jarvis Redwine, and then you go up into Rozier and all the great ones they had in the 80s. And then you had, you know, LP in the 90s, and you had Amon Green. This is the marquee position at Nebraska. And Nebraska has recruited players that other teams wanted. And so it's time to see that come, you know, to bear out and come to fruition. Because as it stands right now, you know, Bill Callahan recruited better running backs than Nebraska's recruited right now. I mean, Roy Helu and Marlon Lucky and Brandon Jackson, although he was a Solich guy. They've produced at a higher rate than some of the guys that Nebraska's recruited so far. So that problem needs to be resolved. Do you hear anything else that jumped out at you? I thought Martinez's comments on Monday were notable. I think there's a certain level of still chip on his shoulder a little bit. He looked better. I think he's talked more about listening to his body. I think he looks, you know, I think you're going to see a player who's closer to who he was as an athlete as a true freshman. And that's not a knock. I think he was at his best when he was a true freshman. His most athletic and natural at in 2018. And I think since then he's bulked up a little bit too much. I think he's been a little slower, and his throwing has not been as good. 2018 was his best throwing year. And so we'll see if that pays off here in 2021.
I think what stood out to me was something Greg Austin said on the first day of availability about how they've made accommodations in practice to slow things down a little bit to allow their linemen to play through the whistle, to block through the whistle, to finish and things of that nature, essentially saying they can't do that if they're just exhausted after a drive or whatnot. So, and you've written a little bit about it, Sam, about Nebraska's, whether they've fallen into it or whether it's been a concerted intentional effort to get bigger. It does feel like this spring they are moving more toward that, not just in the size of the people that they're recruiting, but also in maybe this idea that they're going to trade in a little bit of tempo for a little bit extra power, so to speak. It does seem like that's a priority for them this year. They feel like they have the line maybe that's more suited for that. So I think it's going to be fascinating to see if they want to continue to go at super warp speed where they're snapping the ball every 10 to 12 seconds, or if they say, hey, let's push it back a little bit. Maybe we snap it every 16 to 18 seconds. And that allows us to run a little bit more power and to blend what we did at UCF with what the style is in the Big Ten. So it does seem like they're trying more of a hybrid sort of attack than we've seen before. They've seen what doesn't work in the Big Ten. They have their style, though. They're not ready to commit to whatever the Big Ten is overall as more of a power league. But it does seem like they're trying to find some middle ground this year more than they have before.
They're not going to, you know, they're not going to divulge these state secrets. But my sense is they only have a certain number of plays that are what you would call 12 to 15 second plays. I don't know how many plays that is. They wouldn't say, but it's hard, for example, to run, you know, a pin and pull off of 12 seconds because you've got to be able to identify where the defenders are. And there's a really good chance that if you're not, you know, locked in as a center and knowing where you're going to go, you're going to have a run through and they're going to get a tackle for loss. You can run an inside zone, boom, like that, because you know what, I mean, it's a zone blocking scheme and you're adjusting to what you're doing. And hopefully the defense isn't set up. They've got some throws, I think, that they can put in their offense that they can run off of tempo. And a lot of times they would run tempo after they got a first down. Okay, we got a first down. Boom, let's go get another first down. Let's see if we can get an inside zone or an outside zone and pop it. So they've got some, I'm sure they've got some, what do you want to call it, cues that they're able to follow and sort of trigger that super fast pace. I think Nebraska's at times last year was pretty darn good at running some of that power stuff, especially when Diedrich was healthy. Yep. And not because he was running the ball, Mills was a good lead blocker, and so they could run kind of a power, you know, maybe be a split zone where, you know, the tight end would block backside, a guy would pull out, Diedrich would lead, and Martinez would run behind. And they did that at times against Rutgers. It was very effective. And so, you know, I feel like they have a pretty good sense of who they want to be in the run game. I think it's just a matter of, well, they don't have Mills anymore. They've got to find a way to get a running back who again has that natural gift for running in this scheme, but also is going to be a suitable, you know, power blocker. It was early in that Illinois game. I think it was 14-7, maybe. I can't remember. They got 3rd and 2 at the Illinois 41 or so. And bottom line is, Ramir Johnson, I think it was Ramir, it might have been Marvin Scott, he's got to turn his guy inside. He kicked him out, and Luke ran right into him. And that those small details of, and I think Luke probably should have cut the play up, but those two guys not being on the same page is part of why they had some of the issues they did last year. And those are things that they've got to fix. Abby, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Abby.
Hello.
Good to see you. You did a story earlier this week on Bryce Benhart and Turner Corcoran. Now, here's what I can tell you is that I think that the feeling about Corcoran within the program is really, really good. And they've felt this way really since the Rutgers game. The other thing that I've seen, and you're going to see Corcoran start to show up on draft boards because of what people are hearing. The other piece about Corcoran that I think is notable and impressive is what I saw from him on Wednesday. So he's gotten sort of a barrel-chested. He's always been kind of a barrel-chested guy, big up top. He's got a good bottom too. He's not the tallest tackle. He's probably 6'5". They list him at 6'6". He's probably 6'5 and a half. I don't know what he is. Doesn't matter. He's about 310 pounds. Might be a guard in the NFL. Might be a right tackle. Reminds me of Tristan Wirfs. So Wirfs was not the tallest guy either. But when you stood next to him, it was a very similar body composition to Corcoran. And of course, Wirfs was terrific at Iowa. He was outstanding. And I suspect Nebraska's got a really good, they've got a guy that's about that good in Corcoran. And I think he's going to be good right away. Abby, you talked to Corcoran on, I think it was Monday, and also Benhart. And I was curious what your impressions were of those two guys. They're going to be the bookend tackles, right? On a relatively young offensive line, and yet I think there's confidence within the program that they can get the job done.
And I think they have a lot of confidence in themselves to get the job done, which is something that I really think the offense needs, is to believe that they're going to do a good job, because there's a lot of outside factors in that. But I thought it was good. Evan kind of touched on a little bit how they were how Greg Austin was stressing the detail, explosiveness, in the anger or the finish to, you know, really get after it and go to the whistle like full speed. So I think that's going to help them a lot. And Bryce Benhart talked about how he needs to get better at that anger. So Frost and everyone else has talked a lot about how they're really buckling down on fundamentals this spring. I think that's something that's really going to help those guys, especially having another year of off-season conditioning under their belt. Turner Corcoran, he said that he lowered his body fat percentage from like 27 to like 24 around there. And he's still about the same weight, but he's, you know, really like built up his muscle. And like you said, he's more barrel chested, and I think he could put a little more weight on his legs, but I think that'll be good for him and them to get more, you know, experience in that program. But they showed a lot last season, and Turner, in just his last game, he showed that he could hang a little bit. And I think it was really good for his development to get one start under his belt to figure out where he stands in the Big Ten on the offensive line and against a Big Ten defense. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they develop this spring. And I think that Turner's going to get a lot better, and Bryce will continue on that upward slope.
Yeah, movement is interesting with guys. I feel like Corcoran moved really well in that Rutgers game. And you want You want freedom and fluidity of movement with your linemen, especially Nebraska's offense, because deep down they want to run screen passes. They want their linemen on the move. They want to pull line. They want to have sort of a movement group. Iowa, you know, Iowa doesn't do a lot of that, for example. They do as much. Now they have a quick line as well, and they move really well in unison on zone plays, but they, you know, Nebraska wants to do a couple of different things, and they want their linemen to be able to move. And it feels like they're getting closer to that sort of athletic movement line. I think Ben, it'll be worth watching Ben Hart's fluidity of movement, how he does. You know, he picked up too many holding penalties last year. Holding penalties were an issue for this line last season. They've got to get better there. A couple of them were unnecessary, but I think some of those are triggered in part because you don't want your guy to get around you and your footwork didn't get you out to where you needed to be. And so I'm sure they're working on that. But I think there's a general sense of confidence among that offensive line, as young as it's probably going to be. When you're going to have Juergens, and then you'll have Piper, Corcoran, Ben Hart, and then that other guard spot, you're going to see Hickson, I think. Bando was working in that group. You might see, you know, Nordin Nwili, who was also kind of working some backup center. And then you might also see a little bit of Ezra Miller, Max Sichterman. So there's, you know, there's depth there. I think they feel pretty good about that. They might be able to rotate some guys during the course of the season where a Piper or maybe a, you know, the other guard doesn't have to play every series. I think Corcoran and Ben Hart, you want those guys to kind of stay out there and polish up their skills. I think finding a third tackle is going to be important. Be curious to see who that's going to be. It could be Jimmy Fritchie. It could be Ezra Miller. It could be Bando, who's worked out there. So it'll be intriguing to see how they process that.
Yeah. Brent Banks, too, is another
maybe option. Maybe. I think they're thinking of him, too, as a big guard, like a Zach Stirrup-sized guard. Linemen are getting real big anymore. They're real tall, even at the guard spots. Not as much at the center spot, but a lot of these other spots, they're getting jumbo-sized. I don't know that Nebraska will have the biggest line. They won't. Minnesota will have the biggest line. They usually do. Their 400-pounder's coming back. He took last year off because of COVID. So the 400, but Minnesota will have the biggest line in the Big Ten. Michigan State will be way up there. They always are. And then it won't surprise me over time that Illinois will get there. I wrote a piece on Brett Bielema for tomorrow. People will enjoy reading it. It's fun. But they'll get there eventually where they're going to have a really big physical line, somewhat like Wisconsin. Anything else? Defensively, anything jump out at you about the defensive conversation? We talked quite a bit about offense.
I mean, it's a lot of familiar faces, right? We had Deontay Williams back out there. Markel Dismuke was back talking. Luke Reimer is becoming a familiar face already too. You know, it's such a different conversation from the offense where you don't even know who the guy or guys are going to be in a lot of respects to, yeah, this is an established side. And I think maybe this would be a good segue into one of these questions here, but I think this was interesting. Which one of the second year defensive players, redshirt freshman or sophomore, has the best chance of breaking out? And I was kind of looking through it a little bit, and it's like, it's hard to identify too many guys because there just doesn't seem like there's going to be a ton of opportunity. If your starting safeties are out there, if you feel good about Cam Taylor Britt at one corner, you kind of have a sense of who you're, linebackers are going to be. I mean, it might come down to that other corner spot. Who wins that job would have a chance of breaking out, whether that's Braxton Clark or Quentin Newsom, potentially, probably would be the front runner there. But I think you could identify one of those guys as potentially taking that next step. And also the defensive line, the way that they rotate that position, they like to have six or eight guys coming in regularly. We've heard a lot about Nash Huttmacher as somebody who was very strong coming in, but has taken that next step. Roquan Buckley is a true freshman. You don't know maybe if he's going to be physically ready as a 18-year-old type kid coming in, but it does seem like that line, there are guys who are positioned to break out. Ty Robinson, I mean, he's a third-year guy, but man, he looks the part. He looks like a guy who's going to have a couple monster seasons for Nebraska too. So it's just an interesting group where there's only a handful of spots where you can see guys sliding in barring injury. But man, you feel good about that side of the ball. Like, guys are established. They know their roles. So the older guys are to the point where it's not just the physical improvement, but it's being leaders and focusing on that. So it really does seem like, as kooky as 2020 was in a lot of ways, it is set up the black shirts to get old. And as Scott Frost has often said, get old, stay old. This might be that opportunity, because you talk about some of these younger guys, the Noah Paul Gateses of the world, the Nick Henriches, guys who probably would have major roles this year if the typical, senior departures had occurred. Now those guys have more time to develop, to settle in. I don't know. I feel really good about where the defense is this year, physically, mentally. It seems like that's going to be a clear asset this fall.
Abby?
I think you're right when you say it kind of depends on who's going to slide in there, because they have a lot of returning guys. I think that they're going to, at safety, they're going to have to find that, third and maybe fourth guy that they can rely on, because they're going to be taking a lot of reps. And this year they have a full schedule and not just eight. And, Frost talked about having to find those reliable guys, because it's going to be hard for, even in the linebacker position for JoJo Doman. He took a lot of snaps last year, and they're going to have to find another guy. He played a lot.
He's going to play every snap, or damn near. I'm pretty confident of that. That's just the way it's going to have to go for him.
Give somebody a rest and get a new kid in there.
Sure.
Miles Farmer had when he
played. Get Southeastern Louisiana.
Yeah.
Get Javen Wright in there, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Continue.
But Miles Farmer, he had two interceptions against Northwestern in one half. So it might be – they might just put somebody in there because he's playing good and not because they, need to replace any of those seniors that they know that they can rely on in Markell Dismuke and Deontay Williams. And they really need to put an emphasis on getting interceptions, creating turnovers on the defense in general, and actually, picking up those balls when they actually force a fumble.
Yep. Recovering fumbles is somewhat of a byproduct of luck, depending on where they bounce, but Nebraska could stand to recover more of them. I think you're going to see Dismuke for sure, maybe Williams too, get pushed by the guys behind him. I think Farmer's a little bit different athlete, and I think he's a guy that's probably going to get some opportunities here. It won't surprise me if Paul Gates is playing a little bit too. Williams is interesting because, 3 years ago I would have said, well, that's maybe the best athlete on the team. And he made some spot plays, in 2018 that were impressive. Pretty much missed all of 2019 because of a shoulder injury he incurred against South Alabama, right? And so I thought he was pretty good last year. Pretty good. I don't know that I saw him with the sheer burst and spectacular athleticism that he had in 2018. So we'll be curious to see if he gets back to that. Dismuke, you kind of know what you're getting. You're getting a smart, tough, willing tackler. I don't know that I would describe him as a an elite cover safety, but does all the things that you want him to do. I think the inside linebacker group for Nebraska is probably as healthy and as talented as it's been in a really long time. And so that group, I think, is going to be really, really good. And I think you have four guys there in Reimer, Kalaverick, Honus, and Henrich, who are going to be really solid. Outside linebacker, it remains a question mark, and we'll just have to see where they're at in the April 17th practice, which will be valuable to see. That'll be more valuable to me than the spring game, is being able to see that practice and kind of get a sense of, how things are going to go. I assume they're going to let the media watch that. I sure hope so. So that'll be valuable to watch some of those outside linebackers. And then, the defensive line, I think, is going to be interesting. I don't know if there's ever going to be a big ticket high stat guy on that line the way they want to play defense. No. They want their linebackers to kind of handle some of those tackles, but I think it's a group that certainly can hold its own and take double teams and all the rest. And Ben Stille being on the shelf for the spring is not a bad thing. I mean, it'll be good for other guys to get opportunities. So, yeah, defense is kind of in a holding pattern. I think the questions that will persist there is they can be solid. Will they be explosive? Will they be an explosive defense that plays with a leading edge and flips the field and does some of the things that really, really good defenses do? And we'll see. I don't know yet.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it before. Like, they became very good at getting to fourth down with opponents, especially late last year. But what they still haven't shown has been that ability to get all the takeaways. And that's obviously what you want, is the plays for loss and the interceptions and the fumbles. And so, as Abby mentioned, there have been dropped passes that probably should have been picked. There have been fumbles that they haven't recovered. And so it does seem like if it's going to happen, it should happen with this veteran type group that knows what they're looking for, that's been through the battles before. You just want to see some turnovers, give your offense a little bit more of a margin for error. And I think that's probably the result that you're looking for when you're talking about explosiveness, is smacking someone right after the catch, jarring a ball loose, tipping a pass at the line, things of that nature. So yeah, I think you need to see more explosive plays, takeaways. And if you do that, then this offense defense dance that they like to do, how they play off of each other, then we'll start to see that more than we have so far. Mm.
Agreed. We'll get back to football in a minute. Talk some baseball to me, Evan. Best team in the Big Ten right now, number one in the Big Ten, playing Maryland. I don't know how good Maryland is. But comeback win over Illinois on Sunday. So they were able to win that series. Mm-hmm. It was kind of a high scoring, wild series. So what should we expect this week as Nebraska takes on the Terps?
Well, it's a matchup of the top two scoring offenses in the Big Ten. So I would expect there to be runs. It's interesting the way that Nebraska's schedule has set up this year, because it's kind of like if you ever play that old video game Mortal Kombat, you start with kind of the easiest guys and you work your way up to the boss. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how it plays out for Nebraska this year, is they started with Purdue, which has not been very good in recent history for the most part. It swept Minnesota, which is really, really bad this year all around. And it starts working itself up. And so Illinois last week is more of a middle of the pack sort of team, has some talent, just hasn't brought it all together necessarily. Maryland is another little half step up there, where they have a lot of talent all over the place. They're similar to Nebraska in the versatility of their offense. They have some high strikeout pitchers that when they're on can be really good, and if they're not, they can get beaten up. And then you look at how their schedule will progress the rest of this month. They go to Penn State, they go to Michigan, they host Rutgers. Those are all kind of 500 type teams, give or take a few games. And then May is when you hit all your top five teams currently in the standings. You have Ohio State, you have Indiana, you have Northwestern and Lincoln, and then the boss at the very end, Michigan, coming to Lincoln at the end of May. And so there could be some implications there. So what I'm looking for this weekend with Nebraska is it looks like their defense is pretty well established. They're not going to beat themselves. The offense pretty clearly is going to be unpredictable. They're going to sacrifice. They're going to hit for power. They're going to do all kinds of different things. But for me, how does the pitching hold up? Because it didn't hold up great last week against Illinois. They had to win by rallying a couple times late in the game. So how does that look against Maryland, that's as good of a hitting team as Illinois and maybe a little bit better? You want to see your starters do a little bit better. Cade Povich, I think, is fine. He's solid. But when Chance Roach, his sinker's not sinking, you kind of wonder how that's going to go. And Chase Shaneman, who's transitioning from a reliever closer to a starter, has had a couple good outings this year, but he hasn't given them the length that they've needed more often than not. So I think when you start looking at what Nebraska's ceiling could be, this is a good weekend to kind of gauge how that pitching comes in, the starters, the bullpen. If they can, hold down Maryland for a game or two, I think that would be encouraging for what they can do going forward. So another weekend where you want to win the series, probably going to be a lot of runs. And if you know, if Nebraska can come out on top, they're just going to continue to do what they do and be in contention here.
Nebraska's number two in the Big Ten in home runs. Do you know who number one is? Hard to guess.
It'd be Northwestern, I bet.
That's right.
Yeah. Which is totally shocks me. Northwestern, I put them as last in the Big Ten in my preseason rankings. That's been the surprise of the league. There's no doubt about it. But I'm still waiting for them to come down to earth in a 44 game league season. They may do that, or they may prove to be legit this year. But the thing about Nebraska, I don't recall right off how many home runs they have. 25, maybe, is it
30?
30. That's, you know, they had less than 20 multiple times in the last decade, over 55, 60 game seasons. So what they're doing is unusual for them in recent history. And you look at some of their regional teams, they've always had some kind of a weakness, whether that's been, hey, they've had great defense, but they can't score, or their pitching has been suspect. And it seems like right now they've got two of those big three working pretty solidly, the offense and the defense. But again, the pitching to me is the part that will make or break kind of how high they can go, or at least will determine how high they can go. So yeah, it's been interesting to see, because this team has been a lot different than what we saw late in the Erstad era, when it was like two guys. If Scott Schreiber didn't have a big game, or if Angelo Altavilla didn't have a big game, you kind of wondered where the offense was going to come from. And now you wonder where it's going to come from, but in the sense that like anybody could break out at any time. So it's a fun team to watch. I don't know how much you guys have seen them play, but you just never know.
Yeah. I follow you on Twitter, and I'll listen to the games. I'm not at my computer watching on a Sunday afternoon.
Don't blame you.
Well, I mean, if they put them on BTN, I'll watch them, but it's hard to,
yeah,
it's hard to appreciate and enjoy this process. When a lot of the games just aren't on TV. I'll probably head out to one this weekend.
Yeah.
And poke my, you know, go over there and just see what's going on and poke my head in. And I always enjoy watching usually like a Saturday game. So,
yeah,
that'll be good. Men's basketball. I don't know. I mean, we've known for 3 or 4 weeks that they were going to hire Nate Lenzer as an assistant basketball coach. He takes over Doc Sadler's role. Doc moves to the Bobby Lutz role. I think Doc's comfortable with that. Lenzer is a developmental guy, so his job is to come in and make this team better. And he'll do on-court coaching during the games too, but his job is to come in and develop these guys and make them better basketball players. And that's the piece that Fred Hoiberg really respects about him. I think Hoiberg regards Lenzer as one of the best developmental guys that he's ever been around, that he really breaks down the game in a good way and gets the guys to put their game back together and just makes them better players. And so I think that Hoiberg wanted to have another person on his staff that was able to do that during practice and during games. You know, Doc's kind of a head coach mentality. So was Bobby. I think Lenzer is a true, you know, assistant in the sense that he can kind of take what Hoiberg's trying to say from a holistic perspective, break that down and make the pieces work better. I think there are guys on Nebraska's team that have to get better. There were guys that got better last year. For example, Eduardo Andre got better as the season went on. Kobe Webster got better. His shot got better. I think Trey McGowan's was getting better. Then COVID came. Then he took a dip, and then he got better again toward the end of the season. Banton is a guy that I think they want to try to figure out. Delano's got an incredible skill set. He obviously has the advantage of being 6'9", but post-COVID, and I think COVID hit Banton harder maybe than some of the other players did in terms of development. Post-COVID, he wasn't the same player, but I'll tell you what, pre-COVID, there were moments. There was a moment against Michigan. There was a moment against Michigan State. There were moments in those games where Banton needed a finish, and he didn't. And whether that was trying to hit a mid-range jumper or it was trying to get to the rack, trying to get all the way to the hoop, there's just little parts of Banton's game where if you can round the corner on that stuff and clean it up a little bit, I think you've got a really, really special player. He's got to be able to hit that three more often. And then when you're 6'9", and we saw this somewhat in the NCAA tournament, but when you're 6'9", you have to be able to shoot over guys in that, maybe not the restricted area, but in that little 5, 7, 10, 11, 12 feet area. One of the things that Gonzaga was good at, but Baylor's great at, and this is part of why they won the national title, is Baylor had guys like Maceo Teague and Meyer and Mitchell who could all hit that little 12-foot shot, you know, in the lane. And obviously UCLA got to the Final Four because they had great mid-range guys. And I think in the NBA, some of those shots were taken away, but in college, they're not. Those are shots that if you're open, you want to be able to make them. And I think Nebraska's got some guys that they want, you know, that can make them, but honestly did not make them at a great clip last year. And you're not always going to get to the rim, especially in the Big Ten, where there's great rim protectors and there's ferocious defense. And so I think part of what Nebraska wants to do is they want to take away some of those bad charges that they would commit, and they want to turn those into baskets. And you're not always going to get all the way to the rim. You've got to find a way. Sometimes if you don't get the three and you can't get all the way to the rim, you've either got to pass that out and get a better shot, or if somebody's going to give you that little 10-footer, you got to be able to make it. So I think Lenzer will be an asset there. Roster wise, I still think they're looking to add one more transfer. There was a guy that they were in on this week that I think ultimately didn't work out. I think that guy was kind of had one foot in, one foot out. So I think Nebraska moved on from him. They're probably looking for a wing, or if the right player presents himself, a point guard. But I think they feel like they've got enough point guards in the system, whether it's Trey, Banton, maybe Kobe, that they can go after a wing, a 6'5", 6'6", 6'7", guy who's a plus defender and just frankly a better shooter than maybe some other guys. Still waiting on Thor, make a decision. And I still think Shamil, who's technically the oldest player on the team, has a decision to make too. And so we'll see where Shamil Stevenson lands on his decision, and still waiting on Thor. I think the expectation is Thor will be going to the professional ranks, but we'll see. That's kind of the update. If you have any questions, I can try.
I mean, what's their goal right now? Is it to add one more guy?
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, that's essentially where they're at. Okay.
Added CJ Wilcher last week. I like Wilcher a lot. So he's going to be an asset to the team.
A lot different from last year when they overhauled the entire roster again. It looks like there's more continuity now. It's starting to settle in a bit.
Yeah, you know, they're going to add 5 or 6 guys, so they're going to add some dudes. They obviously added CJ last week. And again, I think he's going to be a nice player. I think he's going to be a 10 to 13 point scorer, and I think he can come off screens and shoot threes. And I think he'll be a pretty good defender. On Monday, they added Oleg Kohenets. I think that's how you say it. Very little known about this guy, 7-foot Lithuanian, probably a rim protector, good passer, have to be a good passer to play for Hoiberg. He is, you know, they got Derek Walker, they got Eduardo Andre, who I thought took huge steps and is a smart player. And then they had Breidenbach. And I think, you know, I just feel like they think, we don't know if Breidenbach's going to be, you know, like a post guy. You know, there's other things he can do. So, you know, Kohenets may very well redshirt, and they may not pull the shirt unless somebody gets hurt. So he's kind of an insurance policy. And then Blaise Kaida comes in the year after that. At that time, Derek Walker will be out of the program because he'll have completed his 1 or 2 years left. And you would have Andre, Kohenets, and then Blaise Kaida. And Kaida will be older, I think, than both of them when he gets here, to be honest with you. So I think he will be 22 or 23. So they've got it lined up, I think. I was a little surprised that they took another post, but they think this guy's pretty good. And, you know, the other teams recruiting him were pretty good. Georgia Tech and Seton Hall, these are good programs. So some of the other programs that were looking to get him were also solid. Mm. But I don't know. I mean, that's a tough one to figure out. Wilcher, I feel really good about. I think they feel really good about. They recruited him almost immediately. And the second he went in the transfer portal, that's the guy they went after. And so they're going to add probably one more. They thought they had a guy. he would have been interesting, but I think they're moving on. So
you guys want to answer a couple questions?
Yes. These are some good questions. So I asked these earlier.
Yeah.
Let's start with this one. What are your thoughts on the progression of the program? I'm concerned. I feel like there's been a lot of leeway room to get this running, but this year four feels like we're headed into second year or year two of another rebuild.
What do you think, Abby?
Okay. I think that there's going to be, this does kind of have the feeling of the year two rebuild last year. And I think a lot of this comes down to, they didn't have an off season to develop those guys, to, you know, really work on the younger guys and, you know, focus on fundamentals, things like that before the 2020 season. But I think what's going to be different this off season is that they have the guys that they want there. This is, you know, they have all their recruits there. They're developed a little bit more because they had that last season. Even if they didn't have the off season, they had guys that, you know, started standing out. They had some freshmen on the offensive line and, guys, you know, in the secondary that were younger, but still found a way to, you know, break out and develop. And I think that this year it's going to be different because they have that off season to, like, really, you know, work on those fundamentals, focus on special teams, which is, needs to be a big emphasis, and they've been talking a lot about it. So I think that that is important, but it kind of comes down to, you know, who is going to be able to develop a lot during this off season. But I think they're going to be further along. Maybe it's going to be like a 2.5 year rebuild, especially because there was a lot to rebuild when Frost got here because of just, you know, the state of what they had. From Mike Riley, and then also Frost is still, we touched on a little bit, but he's still trying to get used to what the Big Ten demands, the size on the front line, things like that, you know, that combination that they're trying to find between power and that speed. So I think that they're still trying to settle into that, and it's going to be really beneficial for them to have Matt Lubick there during the off season to really, you know, tweak things, work with guys, bring his expertise in. So.
Everino?
You know, I think there are aspects of the program that have made some clear improvements in the last few years. Strength and conditioning would be one that stands out to me, as much as they were pushed around in 2017 and 2018 in the trenches. It really looked like, especially last year, that's become a push. If nothing else, they're even with their Big Ten peers on both sides of the line there. You know, we've talked about their size, how that's started to look more resemble a Big Ten team. You know, I think there've been a lot of turbulence along the way, right? Like it shouldn't be overlooked that Scott Frost's first time here was the advent of the early signing period and how quickly that 2018 class came together. I think the onset of the transfer portal is something else where, you know, I think we can have in our minds what a rebuild looks like or where a program should be when a coach is in his second year and his third year. But there have been so many changes to the landscape of college football in the last 4 years that I think that totally, or at least in part, should adjust that thinking a little bit. There's been attrition, and I think the staff has made some mistakes and has had to settle in a lot of ways in terms of the type of guys they're bringing in. We've seen that with a lot of attrition, particularly out of the state of Florida. The type of offense that they want to run, they started with a lot of 5'9", 5'10", duck R types that they thought could be the backbone of their offense the way that it was in UCF. And it has turned out that just hasn't been the case. So I think there's been some learning on the job, certainly, that's gone on there. And we talk about it a lot, but what's the identity of Nebraska's football program? What do they hang their hat on? If you talk about Iowa, or you talk about Wisconsin, or you talk about Ohio State, you know what you envision when you hear those programs. I still don't know what necessarily that is for Nebraska. I think
what's Ohio State's identity? Just to recruit all the best players and
kick I mean, they're pro style. Yeah, certainly all the talent, but like,
you know
what you're going to get from them.
Sure.
Generally speaking. And I still don't know that that's the case for
Ohio State's gift is their defense. Their offense is fine. It's fine. It's good.
Sure.
You have Chase Young on your defense. You're a good defense.
Sure.
Ohio State's secret formula is that Urban Meyer kicked the crap out of everybody in recruiting.
Sure.
In one year, they had four NFL defensive backs. We're all starting in the league now.
But you know what?
That's their identity.
Yes, that's okay. The identity doesn't have to be entirely scheme.
Better believe it's okay.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be entirely scheme. It can be done. But like, what's Nebraska's identity? Like, I still don't really know.
I get you what you're saying. I just thought that was a – yeah, so Ohio State does have an identity.
Yeah.
It's Marshawn Lattimore and, you know, Eli Apple at corner.
Sure. And that's fine.
Jeffrey Okuda.
So is Nebraska's identity top 25 classes that get nailed with attrition and you know, like that's –
That's not all fair. I just
– That's not what you want.
No, not at all. I totally agree with you. I just –
Like we're talking about the offense.
If Nebraska recruited like Ohio State, their identity would be just fine. Their record would be too. But, you know, it's hard to recruit like Ohio State, though. You know,
we're talking about Nebraska getting bigger. We're talking about them trading some tempo for power. Like these are all adjustments. These are all things that are changing. This has not been their identity is changing. So I think that's maybe the most concerning part is that it's year four, and from my perspective, it's just like well. What's Nebraska hanging its hat on? Is it the screen passes? Is it trying to get the takeaways? Like, I haven't seen it flesh out on the field, and I think that's a problem.
So, you know, the division that they're in, we've talked about this before. Talent-wise, I think Nebraska can match almost anybody in the league. The thing that Nebraska's really struggled with is turnovers on offense, frustrating turnovers on offense. Especially fumbles and untimely busts on defense, whether that's giving up a big long touchdown in the first drive against Northwestern, the long run against Minnesota, the stupefyingly annoying play at Illinois against Illinois, those multiple long runs where your linebacker's got to get over there and he isn't over there and makes for an easy play. Illinois kind of exposed a few things about Nebraska's run defense that I was surprised other teams didn't try to do more often. So those pieces. And then the turnover piece where Nebraska makes these mistakes, fumbling the football, or, you know, they lack a cohesive, thoughtful strategy on special teams. And it just feels haphazard or it feels catch as catch can. And if you took those three areas and you clean those things up, you can have an 8 or 9 win team this year. And that's not an exaggeration. They can pull that off. Are they going to beat Oklahoma? Probably not. Can they beat Northwestern and Iowa and Wisconsin playing that way? They can. Absolutely. It's a process of, I think when they came here, their hope and their goal was to be much closer to a Oklahoma or an Ohio State and be able to overwhelm teams with superior speed, superior talent, and superior aggression. Because the whole idea behind Nebraska's defense when Shenander got here is we're going to be an aggressive defense. We're going to blitz. We're going to get up in your face and cover. We're going to create havoc. We're going to create turnovers. We have these guys, you know, Shaquem and Shaquille Griffin. I can't remember. It's not Shaquem and Shaquille, but you know, those guys down at UCF, and we've got these elite corners and we've got all the speed all over the place and we can step into plays and pick six against Auburn, all those things. And it just hasn't panned out that way in part because I think A, the Big Ten's got better coaches than the AAC or the Pac-12, and B, Nebraska has had so many self-inflicted wounds. especially in the turnover department, that they have prevented themselves from winning football games. And for reasons that I think are not always clear, it really wasn't until this offseason when I think somebody kind of looked around and said, guys, we're losing games as much as other teams are winning them. And if we can't figure this out soon, we're not going to be here that long. And so I think the idea is, you know, heal thyself and, you know, let other teams make mistakes. One of my favorite sports books is a book that, well, Andre Agassi co-wrote it with Jerry Moringer, but it's called Open. And one of the things that Agassi learned in his career when he was working with Brad Gilbert, who was his coach, is that the best thing you can do is continue to return the ball over the net and just bang the hell out of it with people until they make a mistake. And Agassi found he got a lot better when he started playing like that. And, you know, harm reduction, so to speak, is a model. It's not a model Ohio State has to follow. Ohio State can turn it over 6 times and win by 30. But Nebraska can't. And I don't know. The progression that Nebraska needs will be evident or not evident based on, I think, their turnover margin and the number of big plays that they allow in defense. I don't know that they're going to create that many more turnovers. I don't know. It's hard to say. I don't know. I think the way they play defense, they want to bend and they don't want to break. And sometimes when you play like that, you're keeping things in front of you and you're not necessarily playing the ball as much. I don't know how many turnovers are going to create. I don't know how many sacks they're going to create. A lot of times what will happen is the soundness of your defense is on a spectrum of, like, the more sacks that you get, that's how good your back end is. And I don't know how good Nebraska's back end is. I guess we'll find out. That would be the answer to that question. Long answer. My apologies.
No.
Next one.
I've got one.
Go, please.
Would love to hear your thoughts on the purpose motivation for Nebraska opening up practice to the public next Saturday.
Ooh, I didn't see that one. What do you think, Evan?
Well, I mean, for context, I'm trying to think back. I can't think of other examples when they've done this. Can you, right offhand?
Callahan may have had one. I can't remember.
And they've opened a second one.
I don't know. I thought Billy C maybe had one his first year. I mean, I can't remember. You know, you were there. I wasn't.
He had some fall kind of student night type events when I was in college back in the day. I don't recall any extra spring availability or opportunities, but you know, it's a free event, right? So there's not a financial incentive here. They're not selling concessions. I feel like it has to be recruiting related, right? Like if you're able to invite recruits from the region to come down and be part of this crowd of whatever it was, 4,000 that they're letting in.
Yep.
But that's even interesting too, because of the way that these sign up waves are occurring and how you have to be on top of those. You know, Husker Nation is going to be avid and trying to get out there and see that. So I don't know how beneficial necessarily that'll even be for recruiting. I don't know how much it's for the fan base necessarily, since you're talking 4,000 people. It's not going to be televised. I can't imagine they're having broadcasts. Maybe there's some social media stuff going on, but I guess I don't see a clear motivation for this outside of hopeful recruiting elements and maybe welcoming back some people after not being able to attend games in 2020. I was a little surprised by it. I don't see a clear, obvious reason why they would do it. Do you guys?
I think that maybe they're looking for some, you know, extrinsic motivation for their players. It might, you know, push them to, you know, want to play better in front of fans and, you know, show off what they got. So that might, like, further their development if they're really pushing for, because someone's going to see them now. So then they really want to be good. And also they, you know, some of the fans are like this question we just had, like they're worried about the progression of the program. And there's been a lot of, you know, talk about like, is this going to happen? Could it happen? And so having this extra practice, it might show people and maybe silence them a little bit if they have some impressive guys out there that are have, you know, developed a little bit more and calmed down some of that talk a little.
I think they're just playing nice, you know, trying to be good to people. Yeah, that'd be my read of it, but maybe there's probably some recruiting ulterior whatever to it. Let's see. NFL draft question. One site shows Turner Corcoran is a top 10 pick in 2023. He's that good? Also, who will be the first selected in a few weeks?
Who will be the first selected in a few weeks?
Yeah, like, I guess the first Husker.
Oh.
I would assume.
Well, I mean, I think that's kind of interesting. Everyone, we kind of assumed it would be Hymus, and maybe it still is, but it I don't is. Know. His testing wasn't necessarily off the charts, especially compared to Matt Farniok and what we saw at the pro day. But, you know, I think it probably is still Hymus, and you've got Boodle, who worked his way maybe up a little bit, possibly into the last round, or certainly as an undrafted free agent type. And Matt Farniok had an impressive pro day, too. I still don't know that he's going to go as an actual draft pick, but he had that great line the day before the draft about, you know, he's not going down through the front door or getting into the league on the red carpet of draft night. He's happy to sneak in the side door and make a career out of it the way that some other recent, you know, Husker offensive linemen have done. So I think he's played his way certainly into an opportunity too, but it's probably Hymus who's going to go first.
Hymus. So I follow two people really closely with their draft. One of them is Daniel Jeremiah, and he doesn't do the depth thing that Dane Brugler does. So Dane Brugler does what's called the Beast, and it's an NFL draft guide. It's 267 pages. He works for The Athletic. I subscribe to The Athletic very limited basis based on having this. And he just released it 2 days ago. And Brendan Hymus is the number 15 offensive tackle in his list. And he says of Hymus, and I think this, again, this is valuable. So Hymus is number 15 on this list. What does he say here? Overall, Hymus doesn't have much of a wow factor, but he doesn't have a fatal flaw either and produce quality tape at left tackle. He will provide immediate tackle guard depth for an NFL team and might not give the job back if given the opportunity to start. He has a third, fourth round grade. So.
Solid.
Now, he had a third or fourth round grade after last season, too. I think there was probably some frustration that he didn't, you know, that they didn't have the kind of season they wanted to have, and so things got better from there. Among the guards, so Brugler does the top 28 guards. He then listed another 12, and Farniok was not among the top 40. Now, that doesn't always mean something, you know. You know, that may not mean anything. It may not. Let me say this. I don't think his tape was that great. I just don't. Maybe it's center, but you know, I mean, he gave up the game losing sack and at Iowa. That was not a joke sack. I mean, he was beaten.
Yeah.
That's a high leverage situation where you don't want that to happen with your guard. And so that was concerning. And then let me see where they've got. If he's got Boodle listed. Now, this thing's got all the 40 times in it, too, incidentally. So whatever the true 40 time was, we've got it. Let me see. So Boodle is rated as the number 51 corner. And he has a PFA, so preferred free, you know, free agent grade, and he ran a 4.44 40. With a 1.57 10-yard dash. I'm dropping that one here. Thank you to Dane. I mean, this, he does an incredible job with this. It's just outstanding. It takes him months, obviously, to put together. Here's what it says about Boodle. Overall, Boodle can get spun around or forced off balance by savvy route runners, but he can push for an NFL roster spot if it becomes more disciplined as a pattern match. So I think there's going to be one guy taken. I think it's going to be Hymus. And I think that's going to be it. Is there anybody else that I'm missing?
No, I think
that was pretty much everybody, wasn't it?
It was a short pro day. I mean, of course, with the seniors that were returning, that played a part in that. But yeah, it was very
great. Dedrick Mills.
Stoll is also there.
Who else?
Mills and Stoll.
Yeah, I don't think Jack Stoll's going to show up on this thing, but I'll look. Let me get to there. Jack's injury history is what it is. Let me see if Mills shows up on this thing. Thank you for reminding me of that, those two. Mills does not show up among the running backs, the top 35. I am not seeing him from what I can tell. So he's not in that group. Now, again, only about 15 running backs get taken every year. 16, 17, somewhere in there. And then Mills is listed as the number 40 running back. He ran a 4.6940. So, according to this, he ran basically a 4.7. And he's 5'10", 217 pounds. So that's unlikely. He would be a free agent type. And then who was the last one? Stoll?
Yeah.
Now, other people can look at other names. You know, I would recommend, if you're really into the draft, which I am, getting this thing, because this thing is really notable and impressive and all the rest. So among the tight ends, Stoll is not listed. It's not listed among the tight ends of the top 26. Let me go down here to the bottom and see if he is among the others. He is number 28. So Jack Stoll was listed as a free agent. He was listed at 6'3 and a half, 247 pounds, and he ran a 4.65 40. That's right, a faster 40 than Mills. Well, there you go. So it'll be Hymus, and then it'll probably, you know, we'll see where it goes from there.
I have one more question to throw out there.
All right.
Maybe you guys have more too, but I was going to throw this last one out. Do you feel like there are any major award winners on this team? Say Nebraska wins the West. Who has to have a big year? What do you think?
It's kind of two different questions.
Let's go with the second one. Say Nebraska wins the West. Who has to have a big year?
Adrian Martinez. Duh. The offensive line. The inside linebackers, all the guys that play. Doman, Cam Taylor-Britt. Those are the guys that I would think would have a big year. I don't think the defensive line is going to produce 20 sacks. Maybe I'm wrong. It'd be good if I am. Really good. But I don't anticipate that. Abby?
I think they need to find somebody at running back. They might not be a star of the offense, but they really need to find somebody that they can rely on, because they didn't have that last year when Mills was hurt. And then now we have, you know, Marquise Stepp. He's out for the spring. They like what they've seen from Gabe Irvin. Maybe you guys already talked about this before I joined, but I think I don't know if they'll have a star running back, but they need to have somebody that can be consistent and that can help them out. And even if they're not running that much, just be out there blocking more, a little bit more big bodied.
Hey, I want to add one more thing back on the draft thing.
Yeah.
This is going to make people laugh a little bit. So Matt Farniak is actually listed. He's listed as a tackle.
Okay.
And he's listed as the number 29 tackle, a free agent. Overall, Farniak plays with the desired functional quickness and competitive drive, but his balance recovery issues leave small margin for error, both at tackle and guard. Okay. Who's number 30? This is going to make people laugh. Number 30 on this list behind Farniak is a guy that played at Stanford by the name of Foster Sorrell. The five-star that Nebraska did not get, who went to Stanford instead. Foster Sorrell is behind in this list, Matt Farniak, and way behind Brendan Hymus.
How about that?
How about that?
That's interesting.
How about them apples? What do they? Now, incidentally, a guy that Nebraska could have had and did not get, Alaric Jackson, he's number 20. That's the guy that Nebraska probably would have gotten if they hadn't gotten Farniak. If Farniak had went to Iowa, then Jackson probably goes to Nebraska, and he's number 20.
Yeah.
Ain't that something? Maybe it isn't anything. I don't know. I find it interesting.
Oh, yeah. All those years later. I mean, you can go back and look at some of those signing day. He was a signing day deal, was he not? Alaric Jackson?
Once Farniak picked Nebraska, which was like a week before the signing day, and Jackson was going to go to Iowa. It was kind of an either-or deal.
Interesting. Okay, yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
I think it's interesting. So all five of those guys are listed. One of them for sure is going to get drafted. That's Hymus. Whether anybody else does or not, I just don't know. Yeah. You know, I think there's an outside chance that Boodle can, but here's why. When DiCaprio Boodle meets with people, they're going to be immediately impressed by him as a person. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that can get you on a roster as a draftee. Because you know what kind of work ethic they're going to have. But I suspect it's just going to be the one guy. It's just going to be Hymus. Next year, they're going to have more. I feel confident of that.
Oh, yeah. Cam Taylor-Britt comes to mind immediately.
Well, Adrian. Adrian's going to get drafted. I have no doubt about it. None. No doubt. And I think this will probably – now, Martinez said on Monday – he's not going to think about it. And that's probably smart because you don't want to count your certainty of success before it happens. But I think he's probably going to have a pretty good year, and I think he's going to go, and I think he's going to get drafted. Because there's things about Martinez that you see the pieces, you see all the talent. Hey, one last question. This is about quarterbacks. Did you see anything that jumped out at you on Wednesday? I know people said, you know, Harburg threw some nice passes, and I'm like, well, yeah. Did you think he was gonna go there and like Uncle Rico it, or like what? I mean, they recruit the guys because they could throw. But did you see anything that kind of jumped out at you?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think maybe that question comes from this idea that they didn't get to see him throw in person, right? I mean, that was the pandemic gummed all that up, but
yeah.
You know, I was on the other side of the field. I saw a little bit of it. You know, Martinez had a few nice throws downfield. He skipped a couple. He skipped a couple that I saw on some post routes as well. But he looked pretty good for the most part. It's hard to judge. You know, Smothers and Harburg had a few throws, and they all went outside. We didn't get to see them for probably the last 15 minutes or so of the availability, and half of that other 15 minutes they were stretching or doing a jumping jack or whatever else was going on. So I don't know. I wasn't blown away by what I saw, but I don't think there was a ton of opportunity to see much. And that's why I think that open practice next Saturday is going to be so interesting, is that's probably the best look we'll have at those guys. Certainly right. Smothers, who's been in the program for a year. And I think that's probably where we'll learn more. And I don't, you know, there's a question on here about, at this point, do you think Nebraska would add a transfer quarterback based on what we've seen? I don't know. I haven't seen nearly enough to make any kind of informed judgment on that. But again, I think the next couple of weeks will be really important in that sense.
Yeah, they probably will. The reason I say that, it isn't necessarily a reflection on Smothers or Harburg or Masker. I'm just going based on what I see out of Nebraska football since Frost got here. And they do this. They're constantly trying to roster up their roster. And so my sense is, yes, they will go get someone because that's what they do. and it may be a great player. I mean, there's no, it's possible. I think they've got a good one in Terray, and I think the kid from Northern Iowa is going to be really good. They already like him a lot. So it's possible. JUCO. I mean, there's no real harm in going and getting another guy unless that guy is so good that it's going to force other people to transfer. But, you know.
Well, the question is, who is upset enough with their current playing time to go in the portal and yet would also be willing to wait at least a year for to sit behind Martinez? Like, I just, how many guys fit that set of criteria? I don't know.
I don't know either. I mean,
it seems very specific.
Somebody who's a redshirt freshman or a sophomore somewhere, a JUCO guy. Nobody's beating Adrian or out. There are going to be guys that you can go get if that's what you want to do. There'll be somebody who's willing to do that. But
then why transfer? If they're transferring, it's presumably for playing time, and you're not going to get that at Nebraska this year, barring injury.
Right.
I just, you know, it seems like in theory, yeah, you'd love to have that extra guy. I just don't know realistically how that would play out given the situation.
But all right.
We'll see.
Nor I. Yeah, I don't know. Like, it's a legitimate question. I don't have a – I guess, again, I'm going on what Nebraska tends to do, which is they're very aggressive in working the transfer market, and they're gonna do what they've got to do in order to, you know. I think it's very similar with Nebraska basketball. You know, they went and got another post player. I don't know if that guy's going to play next year. He may redshirt. But they've got him. And if it doesn't work out, then he'll go somewhere else. Like, it's not to say that Oleg Cohen isn't going to be an All-American. Maybe he will. But the point being that it's just kind of what these two staffs do. I mean, they're aggressive, and they're going to add players, and they're going to play the roster thing, and that's fine. I think that's totally understandable. And I'm sure the Husker players understand that. Some of these guys are transfers. So – I don't know. As I'm looking in the list here, there's guys in here that they could go get. You know, I don't know. They're not huge names, but I'm looking at the portal right now. I mean, there's guys in there. So they'll probably be there in 2 months. Guys looking for programs. So, you know, Nebraska would have options. I don't know how great they'd be, but we'll find out. We're going to learn a lot at that April 17th practice. We're going to learn a lot. We'll be able to see those two younger quarterbacks throw it around quite a bit. And, you know, Harburg's biggest advantage, man, is he's 6'6". That gives you – you're throwing over people. You're not throwing in the traffic. When you're 6'6", and I think he is, you're throwing over guys. You can see a defense better than a guy who's 6'1", like Luke was. It's bottom line. So – Harburg's got some huge advantages, and he had some good offers. Boston College wasn't offering him just to, you know, just to be nice. And Boston College runs a pro-style offense. So he was viewed as a passer by several schools. And it's part of it's that 6'6 height. So we'll see. I think that's all we've got for this week.
I think so.
Good. All right. Yeah. Well, we appreciate your time, Husker fans. Follow us on omaha.com, Big Red Today, Twitter, all the rest. We'll be back next week to talk more Husker football, preview that open practice that we're probably going to see, and more. Thanks for listening to the Big Six Podcast.